Welcome to the U.S. Law Essentials Law and Language Podcast, the legal English podcast for non-native English speakers that helps you improve your English listening, improve your legal English vocabulary, and build your knowledge of American legal culture.
Welcome to U.S. Law Essentials Law and Language Podcast. I'm your host, Stephen Horowitz. Today's episode continues our series of interviews with multilingual lawyers and law school professionals. Today's guest is George Alessandrados, a litigation associate at Keene & Bean PC in Westchester County, New York. George is a graduate of St. John's Law School in New York City. And George, I know because he was my teaching assistant when I taught legal writing for LLM students at St. John's. So now George is part of the working world, and I'm really, really glad and honored to have him here. George, welcome.
Hey, Professor. How's it going? Thank you for having me. Really looking forward to this. We haven't spoken, you know, we haven't seen each other nor spoken in a little while in person, you know. COVID happened and all that, and I graduated almost over a year ago, which is pretty crazy to me. So it's good to be here. Good to interact again.
Yeah, nice to see you. And I know you've got a couple of stories about working and doing stuff during the COVID. So Before we get to that, I gotta ask you. I like to start sometimes with a dad joke. Mm-hmm. Are you a fan of dad jokes?
I my friends are huge fans of them. I'm hit or miss with them. You know, I remember you used to do some of these in class too, and people would look at me for answers, and I'd be like, guys, I have zero clue. We'll try.
Okay. Let's see. Okay, here's the question. What did the police officer say to his belly button? What did the police officer say to his belly button?
Okay. I'm trying to think, but
we'll come back to it. Don't worry. This isn't going to work against your grade or anything.
Yeah.
Okay. So, first question I want to ask you is, have you ever lived in another country other than the US?
I have not. I haven't lived in another country physically. Mentally, I have, based on, you know, what's going on around me with languages and family and culture and stuff like that, but always lived in New York.
Oh, so say more about that.
So I'm Greek. You know, my father was born in Greece. He came to America about 30 years ago now. My mother was born in Utah, but her parents were born in Greece, so they also straight off the boat. So growing up, Greek was my primary language. You know, I speak English to my mom, but I speak Greek to my father. I spoke Greek to my grandparents. I speak Greek to basically all my family and my friends. And one thing about being Greek, you're very proud to be Greek. So growing up, you have to know the language. You have to go to Greek school and you have to go to church and stuff like that. And I think a lot of people start off doing that and then it tailors off as they get older. I was lucky enough that, you know, I went to the Greek schools for a few years and I spoke to my father every day in Greek and I watch Greek TV and I read Greek news and I watch Greek sports and stuff like that. And I think with language, it's something that if you do every day, it's great. If you don't do it for a little while, you forget it. So I just was surrounded by the culture and I felt, you know, growing up Greek, that's how I grew up.
Let me ask you another question. I like to ask people who, whenever I talk to somebody who grows up bilingually or biculturally, If you do math in your head, what language do you do the math in?
It depends on the numbers, actually. You know,
really?
I'll do the math in English most of the time, but increments of five, I'll oftentimes repeat in Greek, you know, like 5, 10, 15, 20, 25. If I'm doing something like that, I'll sometimes say it in Greek because growing up, when we played hide and seek in Greece on vacation, we would always count, it would be up to a huge number in increments of five. So you learn how to say it really, really quickly. And now that just clicked in my head. So in my head, I just repeat that like long blurb of numbers. And yeah.
What does that sound like when you count really fast by fives in Greek?
In Greek, it's 5, 10, 15, 20, 25, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70, 80, 90, and it keeps going and going and going. And I just got up to 55 there. But like, that's how we cheated in hide and seek, and that's how like I'll remember sometimes, you know.
Oh, interesting. So math you did primarily in English because you were in school in the U.S. Yeah. and doing math in English, but that one number usage that was very frequent and that you did very quickly is something that always stuck with you in Greek. Interesting.
Yeah. Almost. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, for sure. And it's not only, you know, I mean, oftentimes too, and it's not only with numbers, it's with words too, where I'll know words in Greek that I don't know in English, and I'm trying to translate them in my head. And I'm like, guys, I don't know how to say this in English. And people are like, how do you not know how to say, like, it's a basic word, but I don't register. Cause sometimes too, depending who I'm speaking to or what I'm speaking about, you know, it's always, people always ask me, do you think in Greek or do you think in English? And it really depends on the context and who I'm speaking to and what I'm speaking about.
And are you aware when you're thinking in Greek versus English, or is it almost like it's not even on your radar screen?
I only become aware of it when I'm struggling to put out the word in English and people are probably looking at me like, why are you paused for like a minute now? And then it's always, oh man, I don't know how to say it in English. And then people are like, what are you doing? Like, what do you mean you don't know how to say it in English? You know, but it's, you know, a lot of people might not know that I'm also bilingual and all that stuff.
And do you dream? What language do you dream in more frequently?
That's probably English. Yeah. But it depends too. If you know, if I'm dreaming I'm in Greece, I'm dreaming in Greek, you know?
And you've been to Greece before, I assume.
Yeah. Yeah. Growing up, I would go every single summer because that's one of the things when you're growing up Greek in America, especially for the first generations. And I don't know if I'm first generation, I'm first and a half generation. I don't know what the definition is. I consider myself first generation, and it's big that you have to know the culture and you have to know the country and you have to be proud and know the history. And it's like a rite of passage going to Greece in the summer. And I had family there, you know, because my dad came straight to America. So my family was there. My grandparents and stuff. So it was a chance to go see them, but also a chance to go see where you're from. And, you know, so I used to go every year, then college started and I couldn't go every summer. So I went in 2017 at the end of college. I went in 2019 entering my 3L year of law school. And coincidentally, as of a few days ago, I'm also going this August with some of my friends. So it's good to go back home, so to speak.
And the best Greek food in New York City?
Anywhere in Astoria. You want to get Greek food, you go to Astoria. That's
Astoria, the neighborhood in Queens, you mean, right?
Yeah, yeah, Astoria, yeah. Queens. You know, there's good restaurants in Manhattan and Long Island and stuff like that. But if you want that authentic experience where you know, it's not the prim and proper linen napkin experience, you go to Astoria.
Got it. Okay, so now let's ask you a little bit about your work. This is you started this past year during the pandemic, yeah. Working as a litigation associate at Keenan Bean. And actually, before we even get to that, before you started working there, you had to pass the bar exam, right? Tell us what happened with the bar exam this year during the pandemic.
Yeah, no one really knows what happened, right? I tried to keep track of it as much as possible. But basically, you know, the bar exam is always the last Tuesday and Wednesday of July, right? And then they also do it in February. But as a JD student, you're taking it in July, you know, absent any unexpected circumstances. So that was supposed to be July 29th and 30th or something like that. COVID happens around March 10th or whenever the beginning of this, you know, shutdown happened. And we got an email and it's like, okay, the bar exam is canceled for now. Something like that. I don't really remember. And we're like, okay, what's going on? Then we got an email 2 months later and it's like, okay, the bar exam is going to be in September. Or yeah, I think it was September, beginning of September. And we're like, all right, well, now we're going to prep for this. Fantastic. So you start prepping and no one really knew what to do, right? Because people typically start studying for the bar exam either right after graduation or a little before. So it's like, you know, end of April, May time, but that's for a July bar exam. So now in September, I'm like, well, what do I do? You know, I don't want to burn myself out, but I don't want to just think like, oh, now I have extra time. long story short, I started prepping probably like July, I would say. I was trying to go on that 10-week schedule that is pretty typical for bar prep. I'm studying, and about 2 weeks in, mid-July, we get another email. And they're like, yeah, we're canceling the bar exam because COVID's not letting it happen. We're like, okay, well, this is the second time it's being canceled. When is it going to be this time? They said, until further notice, we don't know. So we didn't know what to do. Our bar prep companies didn't know what to do. So they're sending out emails like, guys, this is completely new. Just take a break right now. You know, you're going through a lot of stress. St. John's even sent out an email and they were like, guys, you should probably just not study for a few days or take a week off. Just, you know, relax a little because everyone's in limbo. And I don't know if it was a week later or 2 weeks later. And they said, okay, it's going to be in October, but it's going to be online. And online was through the software that we actually use at St. John's. It was Exemplify. And
that's the software that
yeah, that's the software, ExamSoft.
They make you put it on your computer so that you can't, so while you're taking an exam, you can't access any other apps or programs or the internet or anything like that, right?
Absolutely, yeah. They lock you out of everything. And when we were in law school, they didn't have the camera on. For this one, they had the camera on and they were recording you. And they said, you know, if there's sounds, it will be flagged by the AI, the artificial intelligence, the computer. And then we'll have, you know, real people go and review it and see, you know, were you looking away from your computer? Were there indications of you cheating? You know, this, that, and the other. So that got a lot of people nervous.
Oh, yeah. I think I remember hearing stories of people who were flagged or cited and told that they had failed the bar. They had to stop taking the bar because there was some sound that got picked up, even though they really hadn't done anything.
Yeah, I don't know if it was in live time. I know that, you know, my biggest concern, because people were trying to take practice exams and in other states too, because it was a UBE thing, you know, the Uniform Bar Exam. Yeah, in multiple states, we were all going through the same thing. So social media really became a place where you could go and see what other people are doing and what other people are going through. And they're like, yeah, you know, every time I try to take a practice exam, my computer crashes. And what am I supposed to do if this happens on the day of the exam? And so there was a lot of panic on that. And we were the first group to take it, a remote exam, a remote bar exam, on technology that it was not tried and tested on for the actual bar exam. So my biggest concern was twofold. One, let me finish the exam. I knew that, you know, if I'm going to fail the exam, let me fail on my own, not because my computer didn't work and the software didn't want to work. And two, I didn't want any noise or anything to disqualify me. I didn't think that was, you know, that was fair. And to be fair, I was lucky enough where I was in a quiet space and stuff like that. But I know other people and friends of mine too. They were in, you know, in a small apartment or something, and they had a roommate working from home at the time. And what are they supposed to do? Or they had an animal, or they had plenty of people have kids and they have to take care of their kids, or they have, you know, a lot of people were sick and they needed a break and they needed accommodations that in person you can get and online you cannot. And so that was a big thing. Again, I'm lucky enough that I didn't have to deal with that, but a lot of people did. And that was just unfortunate because I don't know, you know, I was reading online that accommodations weren't being granted, or they were being granted last second, or they were being half granted and stuff like that. So it was really weird for us. And, you know, to be fair, we did only take technically half the exam. They cut the exam straight in half. Because we were the first people, they had no clue if, you know, it's two long essays. I forget what they're called. MEE or something. And then there's six shorter essays normally, and then 200 multiple choice. I think the MEE are the six shorter ones and the two longer ones are MPT, something like that. One of those, and 200 multiple choice. But for us, because I think partially because we were the first group to take it, even though some companies didn't want to admit it, they had no clue it was going to work, I think they said, let's cut it down because there's a lot of data going on here. We don't know if this is going to work. And the other thing that they did was, and I don't know if they're still doing it this way, everyone taking the exam started at the same time. So that means we were on the same time as Hawaii. Hawaii, if we were starting 9 a.m. on the East Coast, Hawaii, they're starting at like 3 a.m. or 4 a.m. I don't know what the time
is. Wow.
Yeah. So,
I did not know about that. That is crazy.
There was no way for us to put in those long hours on the East Coast without going into the night. And there was no way for them to do it on the West Coast without starting from, you know, 4 a.m. So,
right, because what time did the test? So you started at 9 a.m. What time did it end?
Well, I started at 12. I started at noon because we're in New York, so that California could start at 9 a.m.
Oh, before we move on, any advice you would have for future bar takers?
Absolutely. And I say this to people that are taking it now. I say this to 1Ls. I say it to 2Ls. This was a piece of advice I got, and it really stuck with me. It's that this is not the hardest thing you're going to do. That's what really I repeated to myself while studying. It's not the hardest thing we have to do. It's an exam. We've taken plenty of exams so far. We've been in school for many, many years. We know how to take exams. Granted, this one might have slightly more importance to it, and granted, it might have slightly more, you know, anticipation behind it because you've been working for it for 3 years in law school for this one moment. Is not the hardest thing you're going to do. You know, have faith in yourself. You know what works for you. This is what I tell people all the time. You know what works for you in terms of study habits, in terms of testing habits. It's not the time to change it. And that's what I stuck to myself. At first, I was like, you know, I'm going to do flashcards. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. I never did those growing up. I never did those through law school either. And I opened a pack of flashcards. And after I saw the first flashcard, I was like, nope, this is not happening. And I stuck to what I know works. It worked for me this far. I had faith that it would work for me again one last time on possibly the last exam I'll ever take. So
what worked for you?
You know, I took Barbary. I took Barbary as the bar prep company. And I think other companies do this too. They have a progress meter. They say where you should be every day. I started a month after everyone, so it said I should have been 20 or 25% of the way through. I know what works for me. I know that I can catch up because I will put in the hours and I will put in the work and I'll know where I can cut corners a little bit, whether it's a subject I know or whether, you know, I'm not too concerned about the MPTs, for example. I know my strengths. I play to that. I knew that if I start panicking, that's going to not be good for myself. So I tried not to panic. It's very difficult. During the exam, it happened. But I just had faith in myself. I know that I'm a sit down, you know, get my things together and put in work for the next 8 to 10 hours and then on to the next day. You know, it wasn't I wasn't as structured as necessarily the bar courses or even, you know, professors would suggest. But I never did do that, even in law school. I knew what worked for me, and I just stuck to it.
Okay, so it sounds like that served you well. So you finished the bar, you passed, fortunately, and now you're working at this law firm. How do you describe what you do to, say, a grandmother or your, you know, aunts or uncles who ask about it, or perhaps some younger nephews or nieces?
Yeah. So I start off with saying I do a little bit of everything. You know, as you said earlier, it's a general litigation position. So it's all litigation. I don't really do any transactional work first and foremost. But where I'm at.
So that means you're suing people? You're in court all day?
I haven't gone to court yet. But yeah, that's what the people around me are doing. Yeah, they're not doing, like, you know, wills and trusts and contract drafting and stuff like that. These are the people that you would see on TV, so to speak, except we don't do criminal law. But, you know, maybe if it's a civil case on TV, never on TV because it's not as juicy, but, you know, that kind of stuff. So in terms of litigation, we don't do personal injury, we don't do criminal, but we do a little bit of everything else. My website profile says I do environmental law, and it says I do land use and zoning, and it says I do general litigation. And I think the most accurate one is general litigation, because it's not only environmental, it's not only land use. But what do I do? How would I explain it to someone? Whatever you could think of happens. Breach of contract, we've worked on. You know, environmental compliance, regulatory compliance stuff, I've worked on. A lot of our clients are municipalities, cities, towns, villages, Westchester County area and north. And when you work with municipalities, you're sort of, you know, there's a whole wide variety of issues that come up every
when you
day.
Say, when you say municipalities, you mean like the towns, the yeah. town governments. There's a lot of small towns in, yes. in New York City.
Yes.
Or just above, sorry, in Westchester County above New York City.
Yeah.
There's county government, there's town government, but not, yeah. not you don't mean state government, right?
No, we do. We represent towns, specifically towns, villages, cities, mm-hmm. and, you know, things that come up. And whether that's advising on, you know, applicability of a contract or something like that, or whether there's a land dispute or an easement with, you know, that the town has or is granting or something like that, it really runs the mill. It could be anything.
So are you drafting complaints? Are you doing legal research? Are you
a little bit of everything again?
Emails?
A little bit of everything again. I was at work today drafting a complaint. It's mostly legal research because I just started, and that's actually something that I always tell people in law school. That is something that if you could get good at, there is a market for that. There yeah. It's really important to be good at researching. I'm not saying I'm good. I hope I'm good. I hope I'm good enough. But, you know, legal research, a lot of it. Interactions with clients. It's weird now because of the pandemic, right? Like I don't really quite know what the norm is because I just started working. And I don't know what the norm is because I also started working at a time where nothing is normal.
Right.
So, there's that. But it'll be drafting parts of a brief maybe, or, you know, sometimes take a stab at drafting the entirety of one. It really depends. It really depends on the case and my availability and the availability and the time frame that we have to work with. Right.
So what are some of the tasks you did at work today, for example?
So today I drafted a summons and complaint. I reviewed a contract, to see if there's a certain provision in there that calls for allocation of spending, not allocation of spending, but whether a certain party has to pay for something. What else did I do today? I did the contract. I did the summons and complaint. I worked on drafting a letter to a town board regarding a land use application. You know,
a land use. Can you say more about what a land use application?
Yeah, land use application. You know, that's one of the things on my website profile. Land use and zoning is that, you know, if someone comes and says, "Hey, I want to do this on my property, but the town code says I need X number of square feet to do it, and I only have Y number of square feet, which is less than X. How do I go about this?" And what you would have to do in most situations is you seek for a variance, which is a variance is just, you know, the town saying, okay, I know that you have less than the required square feet, but we'll let you do it under these conditions or whatever. So you have to file an application. And a lot of town codes or village codes or city codes describe what the application process is and what you have to show and all that. So today I was drafting this letter and I found the town code that says,